Welcome to the Microsoft Industry Experiences Team Podcast. I'm your host, David Starr, and in this series, you will hear from leaders across various industries discussing the impact of digital disruption and innovation, sharing how they've used Azure to transform their business. You can find our team online at aka.ms/INDXP or on Twitter at IndustryXP. Nick Limer is a principal industry lead for insurance at Microsoft. He advocates for Microsoft Azure within the insurance industry and is a recognized thought leader in the insurance IT space. Today, we're here to talk about evolving actuarial risk compute and modeling on Azure. Nick, can you tell us what we're really talking about here?
For insurance companies, in general, it's a very highly regulated industry and a whole myriad of different regulatory bodies. So each state has its own insurance commissioners and they have their own set of regulations. And generally they're similar. There's a few states that are very different, like New York and California. And there's also federal regulations on insurance as well. And then there are global insurance regulations on top of that. And to sell insurance within different entities, you have to keep those regulators happy. And to do that, you have to be able to prove that if you sold an insurance policy and the insurance policy had a claim, that you had enough money to pay the claim. And to do that, you have to sort of model what if scenarios. What if the interest rate went up? What if the interest rate went down? If this person lived this many years, have I collected enough premiums to cover their benefit at the end of their life if the claim's there? If it's for, you know, a fire or earthquake or whatever, the same thing, you have to say, all right, I have enough money so that I can justify and pay off a claim going into the future. So that's sort of the why or the what. And the why is really, as we move forward, those regulations keep evolving and there are new products that come in and the amount of data that is used to calculate that risk is also expanding. A couple of big things that have happened historically in Canada, LICAT was a series of calculations that were required for life insurance companies that added multiple scenarios on risk. So it really forced insurance companies to do up to 20 times as much work as they were doing before just for this one set of regulations. And then in the U.S., for some of the large insurance company, CCAR, which was also a looking at risk for the entire company, caused the insurance companies that were covered to quadruple the amount of work, if not more than that, on top of these reserve calculations. And then going forward, a new regulation that goes into effect in 2020 is IFRS 17. So this is for all insurance companies that held contracts outside the U.S. that are longer than a year. So generally not P&C, but any life insurance companies and some other non-insurance entities have to do these new set of regulations, which are, if not as complicated, but there's a new way of looking and calculation. So companies are finding that they have to update their existing systems for both processing data in and then reporting information out. So they're finding it easier to upgrade to a newer set of technology. So that's one of the things that is really pushing the market at this point. And then you start layering on all the additional data that's coming in.
If I could ask, what solutions are they using today to solve for these problems?
You know, historically, if you look back, say, 10 years, everyone was doing their risk calculations on-premise, usually on a mainframe system with a series of different software providers. And then as they're moving through time and, you know, new data sources and new complicated systems, they're realizing they could either keep expanding their on-premise set of hardware or they could move to the cloud. And with some of the new products that require stochastic calculations, which are just random samples of random samples, and it just kind of balloon up. Either you have the runs take weeks and they have to be finished in a few days. So that's, you have to scale up. So the big move for people to the cloud was, how do you scale up? And then you burst from an on-prem to into the cloud to use those additional resources. So that was sort of the first step. And then realizing, wow, I only need these resources for a short window of time. It doesn't really make sense to have this big group of hardware of, you know, on-premises that I only use occasionally. Let's just only use it in the cloud. So companies are finding that it makes more sense to move to the cloud where the hardware is always updated, the security is in place, and all the major software providers have options to run completely in the cloud or do a sort of a burst to the cloud type solution.
Can you tell us the difference between bursting to the cloud and just moving my workloads to the cloud?
For many companies, bursting was an easy way to get started in the cloud. They realized that to get a certain amount of runs done in a very short period of time was either go through the expense and process of really building out their internal network to support the run that only needed to be there for a few days, or do their normal work on-prem. And then when they had to do these runs that at late quarter end or year end that were needed to be done in a short period of time and to address these new calculations, they would all the data and everything would stay on-prem, but then just the calculation piece would move to the cloud, do all the calculations, report back, and then shut off. So an additional, say, 10 or 20,000 cores would be spun up and then run in the cloud and shut down. And then the data would have to initially move up to the cloud and move back. So all in the cloud allows you to have complete flexibility. So maybe you only have a few hundred cores up all the time, and then you can do your work, do your development. You can have your actuaries look at the systems and test it. But then when you need to do a run at month end or quarter end or for an audit, the first thing you need to determine is like, well, how much time do I have to do this run? And then you can scale up to meet that. So if you want it done in a few hours, maybe you end up adding 10,000 cores, or maybe you've got a 2-day window, so maybe you only spin up another 300 or 400 cores, which that gives you some flexibility. Because what happens occasionally, if there's an error with your data input midway through the process, it's like, oh my God, I can't finish this the time allotted. You shut it down, spin up an additional 10,000 cores, and then spread that workload across more cores so it finishes quicker and you can still meet your deadline.
Now, when you talk about spreading across multiple cores, do you find more that they're using high-performance computing with lots and lots of cores? Are we using Azure Batch to kind of separate out the problem into minute pieces and solve that way?
Depends on the application they're using. There are certain applications that are designed to work in batch and can scale up to 150,000 cores. I think we have an example that's out there that we can do, literally 150,000 cores. They divided the workload into small pieces and spread it out across multiple regions. And then in a few hours, they're able to do a complete set of analysis and bring and combine all information back together again. Can also expand out, but you expand out to a fixed number, and then the application actually distributes the workload so it will finish within a specific set of time. So that the biggest problem when you split things out, if you split them out incorrectly and you've got one small piece that's taking 4 hours and you didn't split it up further, even if the little pieces took only a few minutes, that's still 4 hours, it's still the long pole in the tent that's preventing it. So some of the applications actually find those problems that take longer and then redistribute it as other pieces finish so that the footprint is always running as most efficiently as possible. It can finish in the shortest period of time. And that varies by the different solution providers.
I didn't realize they were using batch in that way. So tell me if I've got this right, what you're describing. Customers are looking at the time that it takes for the batch run to complete, and then they're tuning the algorithms to make it faster.
Correct. There's a couple of different approaches, and like I said, that varies by provider. Another solution in the same space is Azure Cycle Cloud, which I've used previously when it was before Microsoft acquired it, and we were able to that whole scaling process, even on an older set of technologies. It adds a whole nother level of control and flexibility and management to the whole process. And that can be worked with, applications that maybe aren't necessarily cloud ready at this point, but using Azure Cycle Cloud to manage that effectively non-cloud type solution, it can work extremely efficiently and add all the control pieces that can keep your auditors happy.
And Azure Cycle Cloud is a resource to manage massive scale, of course, but is that across VMs? Is it across containers?
It can be used for both. When I used it several years ago before Microsoft acquired it, this was across VMs, across multiple clouds, and was ability to scale up and scale down. Now that Microsoft has acquired it, it can be used for massive scaling, but also, you know, in the 20 to 100,000 cores. But I think where some of the real benefit can be in the sort of smaller scaling between, you know, 10 and 5,000 cores, but it adds a level of management that to the whole process. So you don't have someone spin up, you know, 10,000 cores and leave them up over the weekend. It manages both your spend. You can put spend limits on different users and manage whether a run has failed or not, and then bring the different components down so they don't stay up, which can be very frustrating as you spin up servers to meet a certain need, and then, you know, have some junior staff forget to turn things back off again. So it has some control features that can limit the spend, as well as automatically scale things up and scale things down within a specific time period.
So I'm hearing that this technique of scaling my runs for risk analysis, if I do them in the cloud, ultimately they end up being cheaper because I'm paying for what I'm using as opposed to infrastructure that I'm keeping in racks and my own data center or something like that.
Definitely. It's, and from my own personal experience working at a couple large insurance companies, for like on like runs versus, you know, on premises hardware or private cloud, fixed private cloud versus a dynamic cloud in Azure, the difference can be up to 80%. The net tends to be closer to 50, because as especially actuaries see that they can get these runs done quicker and the ease of use, they end up doing a lot more runs. So the total cost savings is less, but they end up doing a lot more analysis and fine tune the results. There's a couple net wins there. You have greater confidence in the calculation. So if there's an error, you can do a lot of what-if scenarios. So maybe I did a run with a specific interest rate, and then I did three or four. And before, when I did it on-prem, I only had a choice of doing one. I better pick the right set of scenarios going into this modeling process, because I can only run it once on the equipment I have. But now that I'm in the cloud, I could run it 100 times and just keep making different modifications and fine tune to get the results that I'm looking for. We find that as people move to the cloud, they end up doing more runs and getting more fidelity in that, and those results because of the flexibility, but the net save is, there's still a significant net save, and having that flexibility is can be critical, especially if there's ever an issue with the data and you have to rerun it. I've seen this happen many times where, as the process of pulling the data into the models, occasionally there'll be a glitch along the way and it's not necessarily caught in the beginning. So then, do you run it with known bad data and then make an adjustment at the end, or you stop everything and rerun it? With the cloud, you have that flexibility I'm halfway through my runtime. I can stop a bad run, reload everything, add more resources so it can still finish on time. That's a huge benefit, especially if you look at the penalties that are could be incurred for, you know, faulty calculations and the actuarial staff's time as well. If you can make sure you get those runs done on time and have to do less additional adjustments after the runs are complete, it's a significant savings, both from the actual, you know, total cost of ownership of the run, but it's really how many hours overtime that you have on IT staff and on actuaries and all these different things that end up happening if something crashes in the middle because of bad data, but you could actually fix it, rerun it, and then stay on target. So,
Nick, one of the things that's interesting about Azure is that we provide a platform for people to build their solutions upon, of course, and independent insurance companies are taking advantage of Azure, of course, but so are independent software vendors who sell insurance-facing solutions. Where can people find those partner solutions?
For most insurance companies, they've already have a solution that they're using now, and almost all those providers have cloud options. And we support those on Azure. So as people are working, you know, the first step is really work out with your existing partner for your actuarial calculations. They can have a range of solutions from things that are really just sort of a lift and shift into the cloud, you know, some of the bursting type solutions, or even up to a SaaS solution, which is a solution that you effectively just flip a switch and then you move the data into their cloud environment running on Azure. And then they do all the work of spinning up and spinning down all the hardware behind the scenes. And the interface that your actuaries and the people that are running the calculations stays the same as your on-prem, but except you're doing it on the cloud. So it's all sort of behind the scenes. So that's the range. Is the SaaS is probably the simplest way. And the one that requires the most work from the IT side is really that sort of lift and shift IaaS solution. And there's a PaaS solution, which is fits in between as an option as well. And each of the different providers will have those different solutions. And even if, for example, some of these older solutions that are not necessarily technically cloud ready could be almost that lift and shift that IaaS solution that could leverage things like Cycle Cloud and really be a very dynamic cloud ready solution very quickly with these additional wrappers on the outside. So it's really, it can make it look exactly like the environment you have, but only turn it on when you need it, then turn it off.
So can they also look in the Azure marketplace for existing cloud solutions for insurance companies?
Yes, that is an option. We are in the rapidly building out that ecosystem for Risk Compute and other solutions that are support the entire insurance ecosystems. We have several solutions that are available now. Like I said, as we build that out to really complete the entire ecosystem, you know, that's our goal, is to make sure if you have a IT solution need for an insurance company, especially in the risk side and very industry specific, we have those solutions listed in our marketplace, and then how they can partner up with, you know, other solutions. For example, on the risk side, a lot of times they'll pair the calculation component for the liability piece with the asset piece. So it's that asset liability matching. And a lot of times there are multiple vendors that create different components that need to feed together for those answers. One is strictly on, say, derivative and hedging calculations, and one maybe just as specifically on mortgages. So there's a lot of different asset pieces that feed into those asset and liability matching. And the liability side, there's another set of calculations that maybe are just for valuations and other ones that are just for calculations and projections into the future. And how do we make sure they all fit together? So we're creating a marketplace so that you can pair up those applications. Usually a lot of those people already have those different resources together that might be in different environments, and they have to copy the data from one place to the other. We can centralize that in one cloud. We can streamline that entire process and really make it much more efficient from both from an operational perspective and really streamline those calculations so they can be more accurate.
So for someone who wants to get in and play with these services to see if they're going to address the problems that they have, first of all, they can obviously get a free Azure membership for themselves that will give them credits to spool up some resources in Azure. But other than that, Nick, what are some steps that people can use to get started if they want to build their own solutions on top of Azure?
You know, one of the key things, you know, first steps to move forward is really, how do we get certain data moved to the cloud? Because all your tools have to run against that data. So it's generally much more efficient to pull the data from, you know, existing sources, for example, admin systems and extracts, and move that data to the cloud. There are a lot of tools to make that simply and automate it, and you pull that in the cloud. And then you can run your calculations on top of that. Generally, the simplest way is to almost do like a lift and shift of what you're currently doing in sort of an IaaS solution. So you spin up VMs that are comparable to the VMs that you're currently using on premises, and then connect to the data that you moved up. Either you have a live feed that gets updated, and then the software runs against that you're currently using, and then your BI tools can run against that afterwards. So generally, we want people to start small, maybe look at certain components that you're doing now on-prem, and then move those up incrementally get comfortable with the way Azure works and how the data moves up and moves back, and then use obviously tools that you're using now. And then there are a lot of different services that are available that you can expand on that in the cloud. And then as you move forward, expand that out to be more comprehensive and look at other solutions as well.
One of the things I wanted to just mention is that you can download a supporting use case paper from the Industry Experiences team page in the show links. Well, Nick, you made insurance really interesting for me today. Thank you for being on the show.
This is great. If anybody has any questions, please feel free to reach out to me. You know, I have a long history of working in the insurance industry, and there are a lot of solutions that are available now on Azure, and we keep adding more. And from a technology stack, it's constantly evolving. So, you know, I think especially these new regulations come into effect, we're trying to make sure that, you know, those solutions are available to meet those needs. So if there's, you know, have any questions or if you're a partner who's looking to move more of your workload to Azure as well, please let me know.
Well, all right. Thank you very much for being on the show.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Microsoft Industry Experiences Team podcast, the show that explores how industry experts are transforming businesses with Azure. Visit our team at aka.ms/indxp. And don't forget to join us for our next episode.